Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance to order. It's February 27th, 2019. I'd like to remind the people in the audience to turn their cell phones on mute, please, for so we don't have distractions. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilikowski. Will most likely be joined by the other member later. And Senator Costello is here to keep an eye on the committee also. Today we have one item, and that is a confirmation hearing for the Department of Administration designee Kelly Shibaka. And if I could ask her to come forward, please, and introduce herself for the record. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your education, background, your work history, and why you'd like the job and what you would like to do with the department. But before we get rolling on that, I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Schauer has arrived. So you have a full committee, and go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and the accuracy of your resume.
Thank you for having me today. My resume is accurate, and I have been background checked by the FBI, the Office of Personnel Management, the CIA, and the United States Inspection Service.
And now the Senate Finance Committee. So you're
about to be background checked by all of you. So I'm joined today by my husband, Nikki, and my son, Josiah. They're sitting behind us. And I have four other children at home watching today on the camera. So I want to say hi to Denali, and Joseph, and Justice, and Alora. Hi, guys. And when I explained to Joseph what a confirmation hearing was, he said, "Oh, so it's like a great big test on television." And I said, "Yeah, that's pretty much what it's like." And he said, "I would never want to do that." And I thought he finally understood what it was all about, and he said, "I hope you pass." And I said, "I hope so too." So here we go. I was born and raised in Anchorage. Most of my family still lives here in Alaska. I spent many winter weekends in the ConocoPhillips Tower. My mom was an auditor, and she would take me there to help her work on projects. She would hand me those long spools of paper. I'm dating myself now, but they had the holes on the side. That's how printouts used to come. And she'd give me a great big long ruler, and she'd say, "Anything over whatever number, I want you to highlight that line." So she'd help me go over her source documents. If you want to know how auditors are made, that's how auditors are made. That's where I developed values for accountability and fiscal responsibility. My dad, on the other hand, was a proud union electrician with IBEW. He worked for ATU, which is now ACS. From him, I learned the values that come when a work team stays united. I also learned to question authority, always in a respectful way. I loved growing up here. I remember hunting with Dad and eating moose tongue sandwiches. I remember playing ice hockey and taking classes at UAA. I remember doing many theater productions, and one highlight was getting to be the pitcher of my softball team when we won the state championship, and I got to play nationals. That was an amazing experience. After graduating from Stellar, I went to Texas A&M. One summer, I interned for Senator Ted Stevens on the United States Senate Appropriations Committee. I then attended Harvard Law School. After law school, I joined the Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General. I want to explain what an Office of the Inspector General is. Nearly every federal agency has one. To save time, I'm going to abbreviate it and call it the OIG from here. The OIG is responsible for promoting efficiency and effectiveness and detecting and deterring waste, fraud, and abuse. They accomplish this primarily through audits, investigations, inspections, and multidisciplinary reviews. It turns out that the values that my parents instilled in me for accountability, fiscal responsibility, team unity, and questioning authority were a perfect alignment for an OIG career. At the Department of Justice OIG, I investigated complex cases like the abuse of Arabs and Muslims who were detained after the September 11th terrorist attacks. This was a case that was heard before the United States Supreme Court. I also oversaw audits, investigations, and inspections of DOJ programs and operations and assisted in managing more than 400 employees nationwide. At the Department of Justice OIG, I was the first hire, or after the Department of Justice of OIG, I was the first hire and helped to start up the OIG at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. This was an office that was established after the 9/11 Commission report determined that a federal agency needed to oversee the intelligence community, which was made up of 16 other federal entities. These entities included the Department of Defense, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, the Department of State, and many others. I served as legal counsel in that office and co-led the creation and establishment of it. In that role, I conducted investigations of misconduct by presidential appointees. I participated in projects like improving the process for deciding whose names go on the terrorist watch list, and I evaluated the ODNI agency's culture and effectiveness. I briefed the Director of National Intelligence many times on the projects that we were performing, and I advocated successfully for the legislation that established the Intelligence Community Inspector General in statute. I did this by working collaboratively with inspectors general, general counsel's offices, congressional oversight committees, and White House staffers over 5 years. Following the ODNI OIG, I served as a special advisor in the ODNI Civil Liberties and Privacy Office, where I participated in developing guidance for the intelligence community on civil liberties and privacy issues in collaborative electronic environments, the use of social media information, and the development of research projects. Afterwards, I joined the Federal Trade Commission, where I served as the chief investigator and legal counsel, and later as the acting inspector general. I led our team to complete high-risk core mission reviews on an agency that has a $300 million budget and 1,200 employees. For example, we examined how effective the FTC was at achieving its mission of protecting consumers. We also investigated allegations made by Congressman Daryl Issa when he was the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee that FTC attorneys were conspiring to fabricate evidence in order to increase the FTC's number of successful enforcement actions. In addition, we performed information security audits, financial statement audits, performance inspections, and investigations of misconduct. Most recently, I founded and established the Office of the Chief Data Officer at the Office of the Inspector General for the United States Postal Service. As the Chief Data Officer, I served on a 9-person executive team responsible for oversight of the Postal Service. This is an agency that does over $70 billion in revenue annually, has more than 620,000 employees, and $13 billion in contracts. The OIG, in contrast, has just over 1,000 people and about $250 million in its budget that's now being tightened through budget cuts. We found that the most effective way to do oversight of that expansive portfolio was to leverage data analytics. That was the way that we found greater cost savings and efficiencies, and we knew where to look for misconduct and risk. Our data analytics led to more than $1.9 billion in financial impact, $179 million in cost avoidances, 225 criminal case outcomes, and enabled our OIG to do more with less. We started that operation officially just 3.5 years ago. We also led innovative efforts to identify illegal opioids in more than 5 billion parcels delivered annually. This unprecedented use of data analytics substantially advanced multi-agency efforts to prevent drug trafficking. CDO was successful because it included data scientists, investigators, auditors, and analysts in one multidisciplinary cross-OIG division. It became the largest CDO office in the OIG community, and it advanced collaboration on critical incident and emergent issues, transforming the OIG into a data-led agency and offering resources and assistance to OIGs across the federal government. My OIG background has shaped how I'll approach being the commissioner at the Department of Administration. I'll promote efficiency and effectiveness, I'll pursue innovations and cost savings, and I'll achieve results. Pardon me. I mentioned that summer that our team won the softball championship for the state. That really shaped my view on leadership. I learned that no position on the team is more important than the other. I might have been the pitcher, but we couldn't have won the game without first base, or left field, the catcher, or right field. The same is true for how I lead any team. It doesn't matter what position on the team that I play. We have to win by being one integrated team. I simply play a part on that team. On a more personal note, I met my husband Nikki in law school, and we moved to Washington, D.C. together. Initially, our plan was to go down there to become leaders of all. But God really changed our hearts. We're Christians, and our faith really took a different form in our early years there. Instead of becoming leaders of all, we wanted to become servants of all. We started a church that focuses on developing leaders, healing people from trauma and addiction, and helping orphans, refugees, and women and children who have become victims of human trafficking. It's been really rewarding to me to help people along in their spiritual journeys and to help them become the person that they've always wanted to be. Whether it's people or it's organizations, I love helping people become who they've always wanted to be. And organizations are just collections of people with a purpose. I enjoy helping organizations become the best that they can be. As the commissioner of the Department of Administration, I will help the department become the best that it can be. And in so doing, the agencies of the state of Alaska will be able to better serve Alaskans. Thank you for considering me to be the commissioner.
Questions from committeemen? Be shy, boys. This is the only thing on the agenda today. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm still amazed at what you've accomplished in a short time in your life. A couple of things, and you and I have had quite a lengthy conversation in my office, and we were able to share with each other. But I have a question that I want to ask you, and I ask you in my office, and I'm going to ask you it again here at the table, just for everybody's benefit. As you achieve results, you've got a track record that proves that. And I ask you, are you going to work with the rank and file to bring you along with the mission? And so could you answer that? How would you do that, or would you do that?
Thank you. Through the chair. Throughout my career, I have found that the best way to bring people along in changing a culture and changing an organization is to work with the people. And just as I explained with my softball example, it doesn't matter what position we play on the team. We have to work together as a team. So I'd love to use my last work example of working as the chief data officer in the Office of the Inspector General. I came into an organization where everybody in the team had kind of been separated and disparate throughout the agency, and they'd been passed over and not really integrated or included into a greater purpose of the team. And what it took is bringing them not only into a consolidated office, but then being seen, me understanding what they do, valuing them as individuals, talking with them and working with them regularly, even the people out in the field having one-on-one conversations with each person in my department to understand what mattered to them, what their values were, how they were incentivized at work, and how I could be the best leader for them to get them to become part of an inclusive part of our team so that we could all work together as an integrated unit. That was how CDO worked. That was how it had to start at the top for us to become glued in and cohesive. Investigators don't typically understand or work well with auditors. It's intuitively a completely different way of thinking, but the only way that we were going to actually work together to lead a cohesive operation inside the inspector's office was for us to cross bridges and make that work, and it had to start with me. So to your question, Senator, I lead from within a team, not from above or on top of. It has to be from within as a grassroots effort as part of the team. So thank you for your question.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really enjoyed the visit that we had in my office the other day, but it seems to me you're a little bit overqualified for this position, to be quite truthful. But my question is, if you're confirmed as a cabinet member, given the goals of the OMB director and the governor of Alaska, how do you see yourself as a cabinet member fulfilling the goals of this administration?
and the responsibilities of the department? Add a little bit to this question.
Thank you. Through the chair, I believe the role of the Department of Administration is to provide consistent and efficient support services to the state agencies so they can better serve Alaskans. What I understand the goals of this administration are is to, and the goals of OMB, is to do what we can to, within the means that we have financially, they're saying do less with less, but to accomplish the most critical services that Alaskans need. I think that we have to focus those services within the Department of Administration similarly. What I would like to do within the department is to provide the best customer service we can to the state agencies so that their burdens are lifted and relieved in providing those services to Alaskans. I want to prioritize the customer services that we're providing with respect to shared services and IT. I think that that's got to be a top priority within the department. I would like to see us automate more of the processes and paperwork that we're doing throughout the state. And I think that we can achieve a lot more through data analytics in making things more efficient and effective and achieving some cost efficiencies here for the administration. I think in some ways we could do more with less, which achieves both the goals of the administration and some of the efficiencies for the state agencies at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. And I see he echoed the same thing I said about you when you were in my office, right? Data has driven your life, right? You've looked at the numbers. You cut your teeth auditing with your mom at the Conoco building, right, giving you projects. And data drives your decisions. And I'm just asking, as you dive into the analytics, and if there's a process or something that doesn't make sense, do you have the ability to stand up and say to your superiors, this will not work? The data shows it. Are you willing to say, no, this won't work, and this is why?
I absolutely have experience explaining to people above me that the data does not support the direction that we're going, and I have the confidence that I'll be able to say the same thing. I'm also used to having my superiors go a different direction than what the data says, though, and I've had to accept those decisions as well. So I will not be shy in requesting data. I'm also not going to be shy in explaining that I don't see data supporting directions or supporting positions that we're taking. That's not a problem. Yeah.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you coming by my office, and you answered many of my questions. I just have a few things I just want to get on the record. One was you had talked about a few other areas which seemed to me to be outside the area of Department of Administration that you had been working on. One was you said you were investigating some election issues. You were investigating or looking into some National Guard issues, and you were looking into constitutional convention issues. And if I misstated those, please correct me. That's what I understood. Do you intend to continue pursuing that work, and can you explain what you have been doing in those areas and why?
Yes, through the chair, thanks for the question. So when I was brought into the administration, I came in as a policy advisor to the governor, and the governor brought me into the administration for the purpose of conducting efficiency and effectiveness reviews. The review is a multidisciplinary approach to looking at a program or operation to see if it's efficient and effective. It might use an auditing technique, an investigation method, or an inspection method to see if something is efficient or effective. The first two assignments that we were going to look at is to see if the Division of Military and Veterans Affairs has set up processes in place since the complaints that came out several years ago, to see if the processes in place since, if those kind of complaints arose again, the processes in place now would address those complaints sufficiently. And then the other project that we were looking at, and I spoke with the Lieutenant Governor about this, was to look at the efficiency and effectiveness of the Division of Elections. Are its practices, questions like, are its practices at risk for a cybersecurity threat? Does it have the best practices in place for Division of Elections? Does it have the resources that it needs? If we were to do constitutional amendment votes, or if we were to do like a constitutional convention, kind of a generic, is what are the best practices for Division of Elections? Do we have that in place? Those were my assignments as a policy advisor. When I was asked if I would consider taking on this role as the commissioner, the governor asked me when I accepted the position to take those assignments along with me as the commissioner at the Department of Administration. I recognize that under the Constitution of the state of Alaska, it says that he can make adjustments to the functions of the different departments. I realize that he gave me that task verbally and that it wouldn't necessarily be clear to the other commissioners that that assignment had changed. And so he did put that directive in a letter so that my other commissioners would know that I was doing that. And I have that letter here to give to the committee for the record. So I'll just submit that to you.
Other questions, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shibaka, I thank you for coming forward, and I, as many people at this table, have looked at your resume, have looked up at your history, and one of the things that I've been, and you talked about it, and we talked about it in my office, as we looked at some of the investigations you've gone through, you seem to be somebody who's above reproach from what I see and how you've conducted yourself, but you come from a very mixed background, and you, I would have thought maybe you had, I wouldn't say learned your lesson, but you've come from an Inspector General background where we talked about the Snowden issue, and we talked about the Mueller investigation, and you've just come from an environment where Steve Bannon, Paul Manafort, and this morning Michael Cohen's testifying after the Michael Flynn situation. And the same thing sometimes is there seems to be a question of what's going on here. We've had a number of designees. Your predecessor that was a designee for the Commissioner for Administration obviously went down in flames. We've got another appointees, some other appointees that have been brought up on criminal charges since their appointment. I guess, how do you see, do you want to have a, get into another mix of maybe undesirables like we seem to see being appointed?
Through the chair. I think deep down, I really love public service. I think one of my core values is wanting to champion others. And I love Alaskans, and it's what really prompted me to reach out and say, I want to help. Is there anything I can do to help the administration make Alaska better? And you're right. Living in D.C. is ugly and messy, and everybody's got mud on them. And we deal with that a lot with our friends and the people that we work with. And it takes a toll on the heart, and it, yeah, I understand what you're saying. But we moved up here because we want to serve Alaskans and we want to help. And we're ready to pay the price for that.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
You just made a comment that you sought out from the administration to provide your services. He didn't contact you initially?
Through the chair, that's correct.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Majicki.
Two brief questions. One is, what was your position with the administration prior to being appointed as commissioner?
Through the chair, I was first appointed as policy advisor to the governor.
Thank you. So the main question, and I'm sorry, when did that employment begin? December, was it?
Through the chair, I believe my first working day was January 21st, the first day after the Martin Luther King holiday.
Okay. So I subscribe to a philosophy of continuous improvement. And that's after 35 years in the private sector. When I came into the public sector, I recognized a natural resistance to that, right? We have a tendency to do things the way we've always done them. And your record proves that you've gotten some forward movement using some very private sector philosophies. Have you had any indication that this administration is going to set you free? Are they going to keep you in a Department of Administration box, or do you believe that your ability to use data to improve processes is something that where you can have a much wider influence from the seat in the Department of Administration?
Through the chair, every conversation that I've had so far with the governor's office, I have been met with great receptivity. And when I have discussed with them the possibility of introducing data analytics in the future, they have been very receptive. And for what it's worth, I do not think that we need to make a massive and substantial investment in data analytics at the level that we had in my last job, which was 50 to 70 people. I do not think we need a large operation like that to see a significant return on investment for data analytics. So I have not had any sense or indication from the governor's office at all that I have any limits on what I'm supposed to do. In fact, I think they brought me up here because they are looking for new ideas and a different approach, and that's exactly, at least what they communicated to me, exactly what they need in order to fix things.
There's a memorandum being passed out to the committee members from the governor concerning mission and direction. Everybody should have that. That was just copied here. What gets to the point of your question. And so it was verbally answered, but then there's the memo. Is there another part to your question?
Actually, there is. Do you have any examples on areas, just for the short time you've been here, and it may be an unfair question, you've been here not quite a month or just over. Do you have any specific ideas or thoughts on where data analytics can help move us in a forward direction? We obviously have some huge gaps. We have fiscal gaps. We have operational gaps. We have inefficiencies. Can you help us with some examples?
Through the chair, if we were able to bring in data analytics, just a couple people, I believe that we could see some significant cost efficiencies applying data analytics against our healthcare numbers. I think we could see significant efficiencies and cost savings even in our workman's comp program. In both of those areas in my last position, we saw incredible amounts of fraud and cost savings in a short amount of time. It's really easy to hide fraud in those programs. Especially from providers, less so. We saw smaller numbers on the employee side at the Postal Service, even though it is occurring. We saw significant numbers on the provider side for healthcare fraud. When I look at the amount of money that we're spending at HESS, I think that there's probably a significant amount of data analytics we could do there to either fix processes where we're losing money that we don't intend to lose, make some policy changes. Those are some things that we were able to do where we just said, you know, we don't actually want to be paying claims like that. People are able to claim double, or providers are able to submit double claims, or we can make policy changes that stop us from losing money we don't want to be paying, or we are able to find fraud pretty easily. I think also, this is just an example, you guys are doing this intuitively. You did the COLA versus PFD analysis to see who's receiving a COLA that's not receiving a permanent fund dividend check. That's a simple data analytics kind of model. You said, let's bounce this off of this, there's fraud there. That's a low-level data analytics query that you did. Think about doing that multiple times through algorithms against multiple data sets in your departments and what you could return. My goal is we could do this out of the Department of Admin. I would love to be able to help you all not spend money on the things you don't want to be spending money on so that you can spend more money on the things you want to be spending it on.
We'd like the record to reflect that Senator Senate President Giesel's been here for almost the entire meeting. We have other questions? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got to tell you, there's one thing I'm kind of disappointed in your resume. I didn't really catch that before. Aggie? An actual Aggie? You are the natural antagonist of the Air Force Academy. I just want you to know our relationship just could be, it's a little shaky. Kidding, of course. One of the things I appreciate in the conversation we had was your Inspector General work. I think that's something the state needs, and I think that's critical to have a outside and independent agency that can actually look for fraud, waste, and abuse that does not report as a political appointee that works at will, because that's very hard to tell your boss that there are problems, especially if you think it's going to get you fired or it doesn't work. So that's something I think is very important, and we'll continue the conversation on that. My question specifically we discussed was, for example, PCNs. You know, you had a number right off the top of your head. It was, I think, 3,064, something to that effect, but no hesitation whatsoever. So clearly diving into the numbers and helping us look for those areas where we can be more efficient and maybe even transfer money, as you said, to areas that we want to spend it on versus areas we don't. In your plan for the Department of Administration, as you look at things like the PCN numbers that are budgeted but unfilled and have been historically for years, consolidation of services, consolidation of positions, going forward, is that how it, are you going to approach it in that analytical sense, or are you intending to take more, and I don't want to say unilateral outside of the governor, but are you intending to take the administration in that direction to try to find those efficiencies, not just within DOA, but across all agencies? So kind of, I'm just curious what your plan is on the record for helping us find those in more of those specific areas that we discussed.
Through the chair. At this point, my intent is to focus on the Department of Administration. I think that for the next 4 years, I have my work cut out for me there. If we can get down the effort to consolidate services well in the Department of Administration, looking at the shared services effort of travel, accounts payable, procurement, human resources is coming in, the IT effort, if we can get those down so that everybody's in and providing excellent customer service out, that would be a huge success for the state. If that goes really well and we get the other objectives nailed down, like automating all of these processes and paperwork, and we can get a data analytics operation going, and there happens to be an effort where they say, hey, could you help us figure out how to do a lean process over here or make something more efficient in another department, I would love to lend my expertise there. I'm not sure that I'll have the bandwidth to do that. So right now, I want to do well and finish well what's going on at the Department of Administration. Because if we can do that well and better serve all of the other state agencies, I see the Department of Administration like the skeletal structure for the rest of the state agencies. If we can get it in alignment, the entire rest of the state operates better.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chairman. In your position, you'll be overseeing thousands of employees, state employees. Do you believe the state or any of its agencies should have the ability to discriminate against employees based on their sexual orientation?
Through the chair, I do not believe that.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Designee Chewbacca, we've talked and, you know, we've discussed the numerous of databases the state agencies all have. They're going through a lot of different upgrades, computer technology, informational, between, let's say, Fish and Games databases, Commerce's, the tax divisions. HESS has a plethora of computer software upgrades and databases upgrades, and they're all independently contracted out. You know, I believe in through the subcommittee processes and just the time listening here, I've heard about 15 different ongoing processes. Through your experience, I'm glad the governor is letting you sort of have free reign over some of the looking at different areas of expertise. But my more concern is upon data security. You know, our MyAlaska accounts has a treasure trove of information. Is there any concerns that you may have or looking into sort of the data processes of our IT security, because that's a huge concern of mine, and that's sort of the role of the shared services sort of going down to a centralized location. And I have a follow-up question.
Through the chair, as a former privacy and civil liberties lawyer, yes, I have a concern over the privacy and security of our information systems, And in fact, I'm already talking with our CISO, our information security officer, about that. I have a lot of confidence that he knows what he's doing, and he's already been looking at that. We are already inquiring different products and softwares to heighten our information security, and I've been looking through our information security roadmap. So I've been looking at our network map and what's going on with that. So I already have my attention on that, and we are strengthening that as we speak.
Follow up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, no, which I'm glad to hear, and I'm, you know, as Senator from Bethel says, you're definitely overqualified for the position, but knowing where our state is headed, I think you're the right person in this position, and on, I'm just glad that you're on board with Team Alaska, so welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman and Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you explain to the committee and the watching audience what your experiences are in rural Alaska, and how do you think you will affect them in their daily lives?
Through the chair, honestly, I've had small and very few actual experiences in rural Alaska. It's limited to the hunting trips I've taken with my dad and some visits up to the North Pole, up into the oil fields out there with some engineering trips. And what I've learned when I've been in school down here in Anchorage, what I understand is just what I've learned through being here as a citizen from the time I was born to when I left. So it's having lived here in Alaska through my childhood. I love Alaska. I love Native Alaskans. But I've never lived in rural Alaska.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. One last question for me. Do you think the Public Defender's Office is sufficiently staffed and, you know, going forward, looking at what we're going to do to strengthen the crime laws? Because dovetailing on to Senator Hoffman's question about rural Alaska, I'm a little concerned that we might need to add some more to the Public Defender's Office. Would you like to comment on that?
Through the chair. I think that there are some real needs in the Public Defender's Office, but I don't know what those needs are, and I've been in regular conversation with the Public Defender about the need to get some good data on that and good visibility into it. So I think together we're going to craft a good scope for an audit plan to figure out where we need to align some efficiencies in his office so that we can determine exactly how much more support he needs. Because right now, I can't tell how many more attorneys he needs and in what programs. So we're crafting that together right now.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just made a comment about going to the North Pole?
Yeah, to the Arctic Circle.
Of course, there's 1,200 miles of difference between the North Pole.
So up to the, I went up to the, okay. The oil fields.
My real question has to do with the Department of Administration oversees public broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Your lack of familiarity that seems to be there evident is that public broadcasting, which is essential in the two radio stations that Barrow, and which is part of the North Slope that provides 85% of the state's revenues, the total state contribution is going to be cut, as well as KOTZ, which has the Red Dog Mining District. What are your thoughts on the defunding or the administration's defunding of those two entities, or the public broadcasting in general?
Through the chair, the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission provides an essential service to especially our rural communities, where it's a lot of our rural communities, it's the only broadcasting that they receive, the only media that they receive. So it is not, however, the state funding is not, however, the only funding that the APBC receives. It also receives federal funds, and it can receive funds from local and community and tribal grants, and receives grants from the Department of Commerce. And it will continue to receive funds for the rest of FY19, and it can be open to receiving other grants and funds through FY20. I think we'll have to get creative about the grants that it can receive in FY20, and I'm committed to helping them do that. I believe it is the network that binds us together in Alaska, and we'll have to be creative about how we realign its mission and priorities so that it prioritizes the communities that needs its broadcasting the most and what broadcasting that they need the most. So we'll need to shift some of what it's doing so that it prioritizes the communities that need it most.
Mr. Chairman, those are nice and flowery words, and certainly the political correctness that's there is coming through loud and clear. But I'm assuming by all this you are in agreement with the administration that they are going to totally withhold state funds for those radio stations that, like you say, holds rural Alaska together. You're in agreement. It's a yes or no question, really.
I inherited the budget. I have to talk with APBC to see what the rest of their financial outlook is.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned an audit on public defenders. The state public defender has testified in recent years that cuts to the public defender office have placed the state at risk for violating the Constitution. This budget does cut public defenders, and I'm wondering how quickly you expect this audit to be done, and do you have any concerns about us being unable to meet our constitutional obligations while we wait for this audit to be done?
Through the chair. What I've heard from the public defender is that he's able to meet his obligations through the rest of FY19 and will simply be able to extend the backlog for the appellate backlog into FY20. We've shifted some cases over to the Office of Public Advocacy, and they're able to meet those through contracts right now. I've spoken to the public defender, and what we're going to do is scope the audit potentially through different phases to get it done as quickly as possible so we can get some insight into what they need and how quickly they need it. So we'll shift the scope to meet the timeline that we need.
Other questions? We have a budget process going on that's been referenced earlier, and the committee members are looking forward to the commissioners coming forward in the subcommittee process, working with them, along with OMB. Obviously, there's the numerical side from OMB, but there's the implementation side of the budget that has to be done by the commissioners. So do you intend to come before the subcommittees and help us with this budgetary process, or relinquish that duty and turn it all over to the OMB?
Through the chair, I'll have to confer with OMB on what their plan is.
Okay. We will be enthusiastically waiting for your arrival at the subcommittee along with other commissioners. It's very difficult to do the subcommittee work with just OMB because they're concentrating more on the numerics. We still have to implement the budget. In the implementation, some of the committee members are very concerned about, depending on the amount and the magnitude of the reductions that we're basically being forced upon us to meet our cash obligations. So I would encourage you to come forward and work with the committee in the subcommittee process on the budget. It would help make a better decision process and a far superior conclusion, I think, by the committee with input from all of the commissioners as we discuss these challenges. Senator Machicki.
Just on that note, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to ask you to please become intimately knowledgeable with the budget as it was presented by OMB. As the chair for that department, I'm going to be asking you those questions. I've been dissatisfied with the lack of depth from OMB. I understand the separation of the two departments and who has responsibility for the finances, but as Senator Stedman said, you're going to be the one executing that mission every day, and I'm going to be asking you those questions. The subcommittee is going to be asking you those questions. So I just ask that you, I know you've been on the job for a short period of time. I know that you've all, as commissioners, have been handed a budget, but our job is to adjust it to help you with your mission. So I'm please be prepared for that exercise.
Senator Bishop.
It's free, so you can take it for what it's worth, but I've sat where you've sat and delivered six budgets to this legislature with him as chair and him as chair. I never missed a committee meeting with a full committee or a subcommittee.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you expect to seek reductions in any existing state collective bargaining agreements, or to seek reductions in retirement benefits or health insurance?
Through the chair, I am not intending to change the direction that any of the current collective bargaining agreements have been going or in any of the other programs.
Thank you. We have other questions? winding down. Before we let her out of the hot seat, I'd like her son to come forward, please. He's here in the audience. We have always allowed the commissioners lifelines, and if you could introduce yourself for the record, that's just tell the committee what your name is, and then I'll ask you a question and we'll go from there.
My name is Josiah Chewbacca, and I am 12 years old and the eldest son of Commissioner Chewbacca.
Thank you. I think it's very nice that that we have our Alaska youth go off to college, get highly educated, get some experience, and then come back and do public service. We have struggled here for years trying to get the Alaska young citizens back to the state. So it's very nice to have an opportunity to have some conversations with your mother on her coming back to the job. And should we give her the job?
I would believe so, yes.
Okay, thank you. With that, thank you for your testimony. That'll conclude today. We have just a little announcement here. The action by the committee today does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals before us. I'll be passing the sign-up sheet, the appointment committee's report, around to the committee members. We will have the next meeting tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. We are going to switch gears again and go back into budget mode. We're going to have the Department of Revenue come before the committee, and we're going to talk about the investment fund presentation that we heard on the 5th of February, and then we're going to spend some time talking about the cash flow deficiency plan, or basically the cash flow or the burn rate, and as we explore some of our options in putting the budget together to ensure that we have the financial ability to meet our obligations without any special sessions or big supplementals coming next January. With that, I'd like to thank everybody for coming today for this hearing, and we are adjourned.